Well, we told you about all the NCAA women's games on ESPN. Today we have a full slate on ESPN2 as well. Drexel, Georgia, Stony Brook, Arizona, Belmont, Gonzaga, Troy, and Texas A&M. All of those are also available on the ESPN app. So a day filled with outstanding NCAA tournament action. And with that, we welcome you back to our studios. I am Greeny, and we are live, as always, from the Seaport District at Pier 17. We are brought to you by Chase, and we are jam-packed off maybe the busiest sports weekend of the year so far. Here we go for hour number two. We're going to get up with the madness of March. Brackets, busted, Cinderellas, dancing up a storm. We've got it covered from every which way. Then, a week into free agency, and a clear picture has emerged. We'll tell you who are the biggest winners and by far the biggest losers in the NFL. Plus, the king is down. LeBron out a while. We'll tell you exactly what his injury means for the Lakers and the entire NBA as we get up with you, starting right now and beginning with a Sunday filled with upsets in the NCAA tournament. It began with the 8 seed, the underseeded Loyola Chicago Ramblers, beating the top seed Illinois in the Midwest region to the delight of the legend, Sister Jean. Also in the Midwest, the 11 seed Syracuse knocking off the 3 seed West Virginia. 25 points in that one for Buddy Boeheim, the son of the legendary coach. Then late last night, 12 seed Oregon State knocking off the presumptive number one pick in the draft, Cade Cunningham, and the 4th seeded Oklahoma State. And also late last night, the biggest upset of them all, 15 seed Oral Roberts stunning 7th seed Florida. Up next, a date with Arkansas in the Sweet 16. And if you had the foresight to throw $100 on that money line parlay, Loyola, Syracuse, Oral Roberts, and Oregon State, they would have paid over 14 grand. That is how unlikely it has been this year. And so here is Billis back with us. Jay Billis, to be specific, as though there was another Billis I might have brought in to talk about this, but that's neither here nor there. Jay, for those just joining us, I think a lot of people look at this and say, it feels like more upsets than usual, and they'll wonder if there were reasons for it, pandemic reasons, bubble reasons, all in the same city reasons. What do you think as you look at this situation? Is it more unusual for the first few days than we're accustomed to?
It's a little bit more unusual than I can remember, but part of it, we had 9 double-digit seeds that won games. A couple of them have won multiple games, but 5 of those double-digit seeds were Power 5 teams. So, yeah, I don't want to say I don't count that, but, you know, when Syracuse wins a couple games in the tournament, I don't say, oh, my, you know, Cinderella lives. But I think seeing Oral Roberts and Abilene Christian win their games were really a big deal, because Oral Roberts is a 15 seed, even though they have the nation's leading scorer in Max Asmus, and they're the best free throw shooting team in the country. I don't think anybody expected them to beat Ohio State, and that was a big one. Then the Big Ten kind of underperforming is one of the big stories, I think, with Ohio State, Purdue losing to North Texas, and then you mentioned Illinois losing to, whether they were underseeded or not, you know, Illinois, I think, should beat Loyola Chicago, even though Loyola Chicago is a top 15 team by anyone's measure.
Correct. And that was one of the big storylines here, was that maybe Loyola should have, not maybe, Loyola clearly should have been seeded higher than 8. But to your point, if you're the best, Illinois wanted to make an argument they were one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the country. And if you're that, then you beat pretty much anybody they put in your way. So we've had crazy upsets. Put someone on upset alert today. It was that we have one more game in this second round here. Give me a team that you're watching today that you could see another one of the big teams fall.
Well, I mean, there are 3 of them. Ohio can beat Creighton behind Jason Preston. I think Abilene Christian, because they can force turnovers and make things really difficult defensively, they can beat UCLA at 11th seed. But of the real big shots, kind of the number one seeds, the Illinois going down kind of upset, I would look at Michigan. Now, Michigan is the better team. I think they should beat LSU, but LSU is crazy talented. And early on in the season, LSU didn't guard anybody. They couldn't have guarded a bank with a machine gun. But the last month, they've actually been staying in front of people and being prideful on the defensive end. And they've got legit talent. Like Cam Thomas is a freshman, averages about 22, 23 points a game. He's going to be a first-round draft pick and play in the NBA for a long time. I mean, he's got a beautiful jump shot. He is very difficult to deal with. Trendon Watford is a dual threat, can rebound, can score. And Javonte Smart's one of the best point guards in the country and has size. I mean, and Darius Days is their leading rebounder. They've got the talent to beat Michigan. I just think Michigan's a better team.
And LSU was a putback away from winning the SEC championship just last weekend against Alabama. That's one to watch. And boy, very quickly, Jay, if Michigan should lose and we see Illinois go out, Ohio State go out, Michigan go out, those are the three big teams. People will talk about the Big Ten having been overrated this season. In 30 seconds or less, will that be a fair thing to say?
It's always fair when you're the top conference and you don't perform. And being out the first weekend is underperforming for a one or a two seed. And I even think for Purdue as a four. So, you know, when you lose to a double-digit seed like that, you've underperformed. But you give credit to the team that beat you, but you've underperformed. So absolutely, it'll be fair.
All right, Jay Billis, we'll look forward to the games today, and we'll talk to you as the week goes on. Thank you, my friend. And a reminder, the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship continues today. More second-round games are on CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV, or you can stream the games on the March Madness Live app from wherever you may be. All right, back to the NFL. Let's run the hurry up with Kimberly Martin going around the NFL with some wheeling and dealing, and it starts, Kimberly, with DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, Greeny, the new look Rams have a new piece on offense, DeSean Jackson. So now, new QB Matt Stafford has a deep threat and a three-time Pro Bowler at his disposal. The question, though, is injuries. Since 2013, Jackson has only played in 13 games four times. Now, moving on, Kenny Golladay. Despite what Dominique Foxworth thinks, the Giants did need a number one wideout. The question is, did they need to back up the Brinks truck to get him? They signed him to a four-year, $72 million deal that includes $40 million guaranteed. 18 a year, that's the same as Tariq Hill and Odell Beckham. The timing is on for Danny Dimes. Now,
and then there's Chris Carson.
Who knows whether Russell Wilson will be in Seattle, but we know that Chris Carson will be, because the bruising back signed a three-year deal worth almost $25 million to stay in Seattle, but it voids to a two-year deal to give them some salary cap flexibility. Now, Russell actually tweeted his excitement about this move, but we still don't know if Russell will be on the team in week one, so we'll see.
That's exactly right. Russell did what Russell seems to do, which is he tweeted this cryptic message. I can show it here. When the announcement was made of that signing, he tweeted at Chris Carson, his longtime teammate, big time, let's go 32, not let's do this together 32, not let's run this thing back and win a championship 32, just let's go 32. It's as though he's just saying he's happy for Chris Carson, but maybe, just maybe, this doesn't have anything to do with me if I'm Russell Wilson. And so that's kind of how I'm trying to read this. And Mike Tannenbaum gets up with us here again this morning. Mike T., how should we read what's going on in Seattle right now, where Russell Wilson seems to some degree be enjoying sending these cryptic, passive-aggressive messages out there, but not really taking a position?
Yeah, agree, Greeny, because if he was going to be a Seahawk, he could just say, hey, we're running it back 32, and we're going to beat Tampa Bay and win a championship. Or Seattle would have come out and said, hey, just like Green Bay said when Aaron Rodgers said, my future is a beautiful mystery, that you're a Packer, Seattle can say, hey, you're a Seahawk. That hasn't happened, and therefore, to me, this is very much alive, and Russell Wilson going to the Bears, to me, seems to be a logical conclusion at some point, because neither Russell Wilson nor the Seahawks are denying it.
But let me be clear. At some point is the three words I took out of that. Is that point this offseason or next offseason?
You know, Greeny, if you connect the dots, it could happen before the draft, and I could see a three-team trade happen, which is rare, but it does happen, which is Sam Darnold, and he's in the last year of a rookie deal going from the Jets to Seattle. I think he would be a good scheme fit for them. Seattle would send Russell Wilson to the Bears, and the Bears would send a whole lot of draft choices to the Jets, and the Jets could come out of this with more picks, take Zach Wilson with the second pick, and recover a whole bunch of additional draft capital for trading Sam Darnold.
Okay, so there is at least a possibility on the table where this goes. Now, Dominique, I was not able to get your take just on this whole thing, like just the way Russell Wilson is currently handling this entire situation. Can you explain it to me?
No, Greeny. I don't speak Russell. I think he does a lot of kind of cryptic, as you mentioned, and passive-aggressive communication. I think this one, though, in Russell's defense, we're reaching a little bit. Like, his guy got a check, so he said, let's go. Good for you. But I understand that we may expect in past years, Russell Wilson is the type of guy to always say, go Hawks and team this and team that. So him not saying that does seem a little suspicious, especially in the shadow of the way this offseason has gone so far. But this for Russell, like, it's hard for me to understand what he's trying to say, but I have to take him at his word-ish, and it feels like he wants out of there, and it feels like the Seahawks are going to be happy to move on from him probably after this year. I'm not sure it gets done before the draft, like Mike seems to think is possible. I think they probably go after this year, but it doesn't seem like he's going to end his career in Seattle.
Well, let me throw my response to that at you, which is we know how calculating he is. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but you know he measures every word that he puts out there. The tweet that he put out there for Chris Carson is very specifically non-specific, which means you could argue it either way, right? And I think that almost tells the story itself. So, Damian Woody, what do you think? As you see the way Russell is handling this situation, what do you take away from it?
I just think Russell Wilson is being passive aggressive about this whole situation. But I also think that deadlines spur movement. We know the draft is coming up. And Greeny, listen, you've been alluding to it. All the moves that the Seahawks have been making, it's not like Russell has been like, go Hawks, and yes, all these moves are going to help us, you know, not only this year, but moving forward into the future. He's been kind of offish as far as all these moves are concerned, congratulating all these guys, but not necessarily including himself in all this. So I think it's a very fluid situation, and I think something can get done before the draft.
Let me ask one more quick one to Mike T. I just have a second here, Mike, but you mentioned the possibility that Sam Darnold could be a quarterback going in the other direction. If the Jets get involved in this, I would think that the Seahawks might be even more interested in the second pick in this draft, which would turn into Zach Wilson or Justin Fields or some other quarterback they'd have under control for a longer period of time. That's what I was expecting you to say about a three-way trade.
Right, but now what's interesting about that, if you're the Jets, you got to come out of this with either Russell Wilson going from Seattle right to the Jets or a ton of draft choices, and Seattle's picks are so far down that I just think if I'm Joe Douglas and the New York Jets, I'm either going to have Sam Darnold or Zach Wilson. If Russell Wilson goes from the Jets to Seattle, boy, there would have to be a massive amount of compensation for that to make sense for the Jets. And then my next question is, who's playing quarterback for them in terms of, is it going to be Russell Wilson or does Russell Wilson go to Chicago? So I think there's a lot that has to work out there. Boy, it's really an interesting dynamic, because that's why I think three teams can make this work versus Russell Wilson going directly to the Jets. I just don't know if that compensation all lines up.
That's fair. That makes sense. And again, the Jets would have to get something out of it. All right, let me take a break on that thought here. We got much more to do, including the LeBron injury. Did you see that over the weekend? This was a scary moment. The trade deadline is approaching. Do the Lakers need to make a move in the next few days? We'll get the answer to that question. Plus, the Steelers bringing back some of their big names. But is that a good thing? Wait until you hear how far one of our crew thinks Pittsburgh might fall this year. Let's get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Back on Get Up, and we had the tournament, and we had NFL free agency, and then we had the huge injury news from the NBA this weekend. LeBron James down with a high ankle sprain. You see it right there. It was a frightening moment if you were watching when it happened in that game against Atlanta on Saturday, a game they would eventually lose, the team announcing he'll be out indefinitely. And so with LeBron and Anthony Davis both out with injuries, the Lakers played again last night and lost to Phoenix. And not surprisingly, they have struggled mightily when LeBron and Anthony Davis are both off the court this year in 463 minutes without those two on the floor. The Lakers have been outscored by over 4 points per 100 possessions. And let me bring in my insider, Brian Windhorst, with me here. What is the latest as far as, Wendy, how long we should be expecting LeBron to be out?
Yeah, so the Lakers are preparing and telling folks that they expect it to be a month. Now, LeBron's never had this injury before. This is all the ankle sprains he's had have never been this high ankle sprain variety. And so we don't know how he's going to react. He could very well be back before that. But the Lakers are operating like it's going to be that kind of time frame. And Anthony Davis is expected to get reevaluated this week, but he's not been doing basketball activity. So even if he's cleared, he's looking at a ramp up. So the Lakers are going to be without both guys for the short-term foreseeable future, maybe without LeBron well into April.
So what does this mean? I was looking at your notes, so I'm cheating by already knowing the answer. But as far as the Western Conference playoff picture, tell everybody how this thing could play out and why it is so fascinating.
Well, let's stop watching the number one seed in the West, because that has now lost its relevancy. The most important seed in the West is now the number six seed, because the sixth seed is where you are when you avoid the play-in tournament. And that is where everybody is going to want to be, including the Lakers. The Utah Jazz have got to be slapping their heads, because they're in the number one seed position. But if the Lakers fall back here, and by the way, they're a bad week from being out of the top six. And that's not anything about them. They're second right now, but they're four games from being seventh. And if they fall that far back, they would have to be in the play-in tournament, which means they would not possibly play the number one or number two seed in the first round. Not to mention those teams in the play-in zone face maybe the Lakers backing up to them with LeBron James and Anthony Davis roaring through there. So all of a sudden, you've got teams in the top hoping that the Lakers avoid the play-in tournament. You've got teams in the middle saying, can we pass the Lakers to get in? And now the sixth seed, potentially you avoid the Lakers and potentially avoid the top seeds in the West. So the sixth seed becomes the most important thing. So you have a team like Dallas who's sitting on the bubble there, who's got the trade deadline coming up in 4 days. You've got Golden State sitting there with the trade deadline coming up. All of these teams now have a new look at the order of things in the West.
These are things to keep a very close eye on indeed. And earlier this morning, Hembo popped it up there that in Vegas, the Lakers are still considered the favorites to win the championship. Does that still seem right to you? LeBron and Anthony Davis, the expectation is they will come back. Does it still seem right to you regardless of where they wind up?
I like them winning the West with a healthy LeBron and AD, and I suspect they're going to add a significant player in the buyout market. Andre Drummond is the guy that they're hoping for, so I think they're going to be significantly better. Can they beat Brooklyn at full power, 4 out of 7? Well, we haven't seen the full Brooklyn team yet, because I think Brooklyn is still involved in the trade market and could still be involved in the buyout market. That's a series I want to watch. I'm not ready to declare a winner there, but I still like the Lakers if they're healthy. But I'll tell you what. If they have to play a play-in tournament and then have to play the number one seed coming out and haven't even played the Clippers yet, that's going to be a tough route.
All right. This whole thing just got very interesting over the weekend, and we'll be keeping a close eye. Wendy, outstanding. Thank you very much. Back to the NFL we go now, and let's talk about winners and losers of free agency. And Kimberly Martin, I'll start with you. Who's your biggest winner in free agency?
Greeny, it's got to be the Bucks. Aside from Leonard Fournette, they retained all the guys that we were worried they'd lose. And Godwin, Barrett, the band is back together, and they're trying to run it back and win another Super Bowl. They've got to be the favorite.
Dominique, give me a winner. What a week into NFL free agency.
I like what the Cleveland Browns have done. They've addressed their defense. They added right there, you see Malik Jackson for some depth on the defensive line. But more importantly, they bolstered that secondary. I think that's Troy Hill right there, the corner that they added who can play nickel. He had 3 touchdowns last year, 2 interceptions returned and a fumble return. And John Johnson might be the best safety in the league. They added him to that roster. He can cover everybody. That team just got better on defense.
And then finally, Mike T, how about a loser?
It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They brought back Ben Roethlisberger at 39 years old. He averages 6.25 yards per attempt, which was 30th in the league. They re-signed Juju Smith-Schuster, who averages less than 9 yards reception. And they still have questions at left tackle, center, at running back. I think this is a team that could very well wind up with one of the top 5 picks in next year's draft.
Isn't that interesting? Now, here's a team that under Mike Tomlin has never had a losing record, and that at one point, not that long ago, was at 11-0. And yet that doesn't sound crazy to me. Dominique, does it sound crazy to you?
Yeah, when Mike T lays it out like that, we understand how many holes they have, but it's hard to bet against that organization and that head coach because we've never seen them be that bad. But he's right. The defense is probably going to take a step back, and that offense doesn't have a lot of answers for the problems that they have up front, and the quarterback certainly is going to get younger. No one thinks of him the way that we think of Tom Brady, who Tom Brady kind of relies on his mental part of approaching the game, and he is taking care of his body to a degree that no one considers Ben Roethlisberger like a mental tactician or someone who takes great care of his body. So I think that Mike T might be on to something.
And Kimberly, how about that?
A five-win Steelers team.
The long-term situation at quarterback with Pittsburgh. They did choose to bring Ben back. He wanted to come back. They brought him back at a lower number. They'll try and put the band back together for one more run. But clearly, the future is upon us in Pittsburgh. What is the sense around the league of what they will ultimately do at quarterback long-term?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing they can do is look to the future after Ben is done and you get one more year out of him. Mike T has been on the Steelers for, you know, since the offseason about them not being good, and he's right. But Ben Roethlisberger, what are your other options right now, given their cap situation, what they have? They've got Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins, who they sign, you know, for a one-year deal. The options internally aren't great, so they're going to need to look elsewhere outside the building very, very soon.
It would seem that way. Haskins is a project, I suppose, at this point, to say the least. So, Mike T, how would you do it? You're in the situation you're in right now. How would you be approaching the quarterback situation of the future in Pittsburgh if you're making the decisions there?
Greeny, you have to aggressively move up in this year's draft. Next year, there's only one quarterback, Keaton Slottis of USC. You have to get your quarterback this year. And then maybe it's a little bit like Kansas City a couple years ago. You have Alex Smith, the veteran. You trade up for Mahomes. Mahomes plays the last game of his rookie year, and the rest is history. So whatever it takes, if I'm Pittsburgh, I move up in this year's draft, let him learn for 1 year under Ben Roethlisberger, and then he's your quarterback moving forward in 2022.
They'd have a long way to go up to try and get one of the higher-profile guys in this draft, and there are some players on one-year deals. What do you think, Nick? If you do that, then you're not using this year's draft. If you bring Ben back and you bring Juju back, you're kind of taking a shot at one more run, and now by drafting the quarterback, you're not really doing that. Which way do you go, Nick, quickly?
Yeah, they brought him back. I think if you can move up, you try to move up and address that situation, but they have other holes that they need to address also. And Dwayne Haskins was a really great college player, so maybe they can try to figure out what they have in Dwayne Haskins. Maybe there was a wake-up call, him ending up there and getting released from Washington, and maybe he can make something out of his career. So the final chapter of the story of Dwayne Haskins' career hasn't been written yet.
He was a first-round pick 2 years ago. We'll take a break. More quarterback conversations as we continue. Aaron Rodgers' future has been described as a beautiful mystery. Could this be his final season as a Packer? Dominique will answer the question next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Come on, get up.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering that. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
This is always one of my favorite times of the week. With Dominique Foxworth is here. I will propose a series of hard-hitting questions, and Dominique, whether he's ready to or not, will have to answer the question. Here's the first one. It's pretty simple. Will this be Aaron Rodgers' last season in Green Bay?
Absolutely not. I mean, I understand that he didn't restructure his contract, and it makes people think that maybe he is using this to get out, and maybe he's caught a bit of the Tom Brady bug that everyone seems to have caught and wants some more power and go elsewhere. But I don't see that happening. He's still under contract for two more seasons, and no matter how big the cap hit is, I can't imagine Green Bay releasing him or trading him or doing whatever it would require for them to move on to the Jordan Love era. So assuming he has another healthy, impressive season, he'll be back for another season after that and probably another season after that, and they will renegotiate his deal and find somewhere else for Jordan Love to go, because they're not moving on from Aaron Rodgers while he's still playing MVP-level football.
It's interesting that you say that. You can't picture them doing it. I couldn't picture them trading up to take a quarterback in the first round either, but they just did that. So we'll see what winds up happening. All right, next, we got two quarterbacks who are taking over good teams with a chance to sort of resurrect their careers as veterans. Who are you buying? Who has a bigger season, Cam Newton or Jameis Winston?
All right, this one is tough. I think I told the producers I want to go with Jameis Winston. So I'm sure we got a bunch of Jameis Winston video queued up, but I think I want to change my mind. Like, Cam Newton and Jameis Winston both are going to be behind good offensive lines. I've got to say that Jameis Winston's going to have the benefit of having a Sean Payton-designed offense and Alvin Kamara, which helps him, in a good defense on the other side. But Cam Newton has all those things, too. He has a great offensive line, great coaches, a great ability to run that Jameis Winston does not have, and he's added some weapons. So I think I want to lean Cam Newton's way, in large part because right now I think Jameis Winston isn't even listed as the starter. He's going to have to share time, if nothing else, with Hill. So I gotta switch back and go with Cam Newton, despite the fact that his talent level isn't as high as it used to be in his prime.
By the way, you're right. One of those producers, Dave McKinnon, that sound you heard is him just falling out of his chair because he had all the Jameis Winston video ready for you, so you changed your mind. All right, fair enough.
I changed my mind.
Last one. Which AFC team that missed the playoffs last year is going to make it this year?
I think it's going to be my beloved Denver Broncos. So, Dave, you can go ahead and roll that footage because I'm not changing my mind on this one. I think the Broncos, they have so many weapons on the outside, and I understand that Drew Locke may not be the answer at quarterback. They brought in Brissett, who I think is a lot more reliable should he get in, and maybe they draft a quarterback. But they got Judy, Hamler, Sutton, Fant. They got Bowl, a great left tackle, and this defense is loaded as it's been for the last several years, and they're going to bring back a future Hall of Famer in Von Miller. I'm not sure what level he'll be at, but he'll be an impact player. So I think that defense, along with those playmakers on offense, and if they could get a little bit better play and more consistent play at the quarterback position, either through the draft or maturation from Locke, or maybe even Jacoby Brissett takes over, I think this team could contend and take one of those seven playoff spots.
They also may wind up being in the quarterback conversation when we get to the draft. We will see. So that is answer the question. It was also a bold prediction. So let's get some bold NFL predictions from some of the other members of the panel today. Mike T, give me a bold prediction looking ahead to 2021.
Russell Wilson will be traded, and I still think it's likely that it's going to be Chicago, but Greeny, as you just suggested a couple of minutes ago, maybe the Jets get involved. That's a little bit of a longer shot, but no one's denying it. Russell Wilson isn't. The Seahawks isn't. I say that he gets traded at some point between today and the draft.
Yeah, and would most likely, to your point, be a three-team deal if the Bears were going to pull it off. All right, D-Wood, you're next. Give me a bold prediction.
Yeah, the San Francisco 49ers will represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. Remember, this team was there a couple years ago, and probably no team would hit with the injury bug worse than the San Francisco 49ers. They're going to be getting all these guys back. They re-signed Trent Williams. Kyle Shanahan is still at the helm calling plays. This team has plenty of talent to get back to the Super Bowl.
Oh, I like that one. Kimberly Martin, give us a bold prediction.
Greeny, the Dallas Cowboys will win the NFC East. I don't care. I don't care how it sounds. I'm going with that. Against my better judgment, they've got the best QB in the division, the best running back, and the best wide receivers in Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. Hello.
They have the biggest names at running back and wide receiver. Can I bring everyone in on this one? This is a fight that we've been having.
Here we go.
Let me say this. If the Dallas Cowboys win that division, how much do they pay defensive coordinators? because Dan Quinn, all I hear from anybody here is Dan Quinn is going to change that entire. They gave up 160 yards rushing per game last year. Can Dan Quinn stop the run? Because unless Dan Quinn is a three technique that absolutely clogs the middle and no one can run the football against him, then I'm not sure how he's going to stop that. Damian Woody, they gave up 160 yards a game on the ground last year. Can a defensive coordinator change all that?
Greeny, you acting like he doesn't have to make them the 85 Bears. Just get them average, Greeny. Get them, if they are just average, they will win this division. That's what I'm banking on.
Let me throw a different thought out there. Mike Tannenbaum, we know how much Ezekiel Elliott gets paid. We know how much Amari Cooper gets paid. We know where C.D. Lamb was drafted. But when you look at those weapons, and I'm just going to throw it out there again, you look at Antonio Gibson, Terry McLaurin, and Curtis Samuel. If you take the names off the backs of the jerseys, is it that obvious that those three Cowboys are that much better than those three Washington footballers?
I totally agree, Greeny. And taking it a step further, is Dak Prescott $30 million a year better than Ryan Fitzpatrick? Your point is really well taken. I'd rather take the Washington skill players, including the quarterback, and their salaries and that great defense than Dallas' skill players and their quarterback and their defense. And Greeny, we've talked about this before. It all started 2 years ago with Zeke's contract. They paid him too much too early, and it's costing them from a team-building standpoint.
Go ahead, Kimberly. I'll give you the final word.
All right. Listen, contracts aside, I get it. However, I disagree with something Dominique said earlier. If you don't have a very good QB, I don't care how good the rest of your skill players are. So to me, when you compare Dak and Fitzpatrick, I love the Fitz signing for Washington. I love it. However, Dak versus Fitz, I think Dallas has the better QB. I'm going to roll with the Cowboys.
Did you see what happened there, Dominique? She chose to disagree with you in a segment you weren't even in. We had to bring you in. She just calls you out even when you're not in the conversation.
What did I do to you, Kimberly? I love you. I think you're so smart. You bring great analysis. You make the show better. I'm just sitting here texting with people, chilling out, thinking I'm down, and I hear, I want to disagree with Dominique. Why do you want to disagree with me? Because I'm right all the time?
Because
why do you
want
to be wrong? That doesn't make sense
to
me.
All right,
well, we
save
agree
this
that Dak is
save
a
this
better
clip,
quarterback.
Greeny.
We will see. No one is arguing.
We agree. Sorry,
no one in their right minds is arguing that Fitzpatrick is a better quarterback than Dak. All I'm saying is
look at the group around them. You said it wrong, Greeny.
What? What did I say? I said no one is arguing that Fitzpatrick is better than Dak. Right. No one is going to make that argument.
Gotcha.
No one in their right minds is going to say that, obviously. But what I'm saying is Fitzpatrick only has to be good enough. Right, let me leave it there for the moment. I think we know what, if we could just sum it all up, I'm right and the rest of you are wrong. As we continue, it's Jalen Hurts in Philly. For now, you don't want to miss one theory that has the Eagles going back to the future at quarterback, and you'll hear it next.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
On Get Up, and let's talk about the quarterback situation in Philadelphia, shall we? Their starter the last 5 years, Carson Wentz, is now in Indianapolis after he was benched and then traded. The man he was benched for, Jalen Hurts, is currently the only quarterback on the roster. He was a second-round pick a year ago. The Eagles have the sixth overall pick in this coming draft. Will Philly turn to a quarterback there or opt for a veteran? Our Jeremy Fowler said this over the weekend.
I wouldn't take a Nick Foles Philadelphia reunion off the table right now, because a few weeks ago, when Chicago was looking to get Carson Wentz, they included Nick Foles in a potential package to Philadelphia. Now, Wentz ultimately went to Indianapolis, but those talks had been ongoing. They're in place. All they would have to do this week is revive them.
So that's obviously intriguing, and when there's a statue of the guy in front of the building, it becomes fascinating to potentially bring him back. But Mike T, you were making a point. in our meeting earlier this morning about a way that move could solidify them and set them up to do other things if they want to. Let's talk through that.
Yeah, absolutely. It allows them to deal from a position of strength at the draft, because if you have Jalen Hurts and Nick Foles, you could go into next season feeling pretty good about your quarterback situation. And then let's pick a team like New England that's at 15, and they have to go all the way up to, let's say, 6 with Philadelphia. You could get a massive, massive haul of picks and players. And now if you're Philly, you don't have to worry about missing out on a quarterback. And when you're going into a draft from a GM's perspective, you want to have your roster set so when unexpected opportunities present themselves, you can take advantage of them. There will be a ton of movement in this year's draft because of the quarterbacks and all the teams that need them. So if I'm Philly and I can get Foles, it enhances my position to trade back from a position of strength and not a position of weakness.
So that's one interesting way to look at it. Neek, does this move the needle for you?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't until Mike just laid it out that way. That makes sense to me. It gives them some flexibility, gives them some more stability at the position. It allows them to trade back and fill up. Because it seems to me that they're clearly in rebuild mode right now in Philadelphia. They're trying to rebuild that roster. And maybe it's going to be Jalen Hurts' team 2-3 years from now when that roster is stable. But right now, they need to have the flexibility to draft somebody who falls to them at 6 or trade back, and which I think is more likely and probably a better decision, and rebuild the rest of that roster.
So, Kimberly, as you consider the situation here, and again, they pick 6. One of the better quarterbacks in this draft could easily wind up falling there. And the scenario that we're laying out has the Eagles passing on that opportunity with Jalen Hurts basically being their primary quarterback option. What do you think, and what are you hearing around the league about the likelihood that they do that? Kimberly.
No, listen, every team, if you don't have a great QB, then you don't have anything. So nothing is off the table. I will say, Greeny, though, if they were to take a QB at 6, then what does that tell you? That says all of the moves, the giving Carson Wentz all that money, jettisoning Carson Wentz, making Jalen the guy until the draft comes where you take another guy, that says you're not sold on Jalen Hurts. So what have all the moves in Philly been about if they do take a quarterback at 6? It is interesting. Listen, if you can get a QB that you love, go for it. But then that means that the QB decisions you made previously don't make a lot of sense, and that should give Philly fans pause.
Well, exactly. But I think, Dominique, another way of describing what Kimberly just said is the Eagles have made a mess of things. And I think a lot of people on the outside would say, yeah, that sounds about right. That's pretty much, I know you're not, but that's what it all adds up to. They've kind of made a mess of this thing.
I think
a lot of people think the owner has a lot to
Kimberly
do with it.
Kimberly doesn't have to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to say it. They have made a mess of things. You don't have to put that on Kimberly. I will pin that proudly on my chest because that's what they have done. And I think I understand what Kimberly is saying, but there aren't very many great quarterbacks out there. And lots of teams succeed and are competitive without having great quarterbacks. We can look at the way the Rams were competitive with Goff. We could even look at the way the Eagles have been competitive with Wentz. We can look at the 49ers being competitive with Jimmy Garoppolo and various backups. I just think that it's a smarter, more stable way to build. Yeah, these are teams that I'm naming teams that have been in or won Super Bowls. Like, I don't know what else you want out of your team.
Competitive.
Okay, so Kimberly.
Or win the Super Bowl.
I'm with you. I would love to draft a great quarterback, but the chances of them finding one are low. It's much smarter and I think more stable way to build a franchise, because there is a cost to missing at quarterback. It's not just that you missed on quarterback. It's that there's opportunity cost for all the other things you could have done to build up a team.
Mike Tannenbaum, I got 15 seconds. Go.
Yeah, the only grade we could give Jalen Hurts is a grade of incomplete. He's only thrown 148 passes in the NFL. We need more information on him to know whether or not he could be a viable starter.
Okay. The only thing we know for certain is that Kimberly was going to disagree with Neek there no matter what he said. All right. Let me run the floor, meanwhile, through some more of the action. Let's go to the women's tournament yesterday. No Gino Auriemma. No problem for UConn. The top-seeding Huskies routing High Point 102-59 without their head coach, who's on the sidelines due to COVID-19 protocols. The freshman star, Paige Beckers, set a school record for most points in a tournament debut with 24. That moves us to another number one seed, also winning easily, South Carolina over Mercer 79-53. It was Dawn Staley's 500th career win. The Gamecocks were the national champs in 2017, which is the last time the Final Four was played in Texas. Meanwhile, in what may have been the closest thing to an upset for the women's tournament, the 12 seed Stephen F. Austin took number 5 Georgia Tech to overtime, but it was Georgia Tech's clutch D in the final seconds that ultimately secured a win 54-52. And the action is coming your way here today, starting noon Eastern on ESPN. First round continues: North Carolina, Alabama, Wright State, Arkansas, Mount St. Mary's, Maryland, and Michigan State will take on Iowa State. All the games are also available on the ESPN app. As we continue with a bunch of franchise difference makers available in the draft, we will tell you which team absolutely has to get this thing right next month. That's next.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Get Up is brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Only pay for what you need. And you're watching Get Up, and First Take is coming your way in 6 minutes here on ESPN. Who should be the favorites in the NFC East? And what is the best Cinderella story of the dance so far? Stephen A. Max and Molly will have that for you coming up top of the hour. Meanwhile, we are going on the clock talking about which team absolutely has the most pressure to get it right in the draft next week. 30 seconds per. Dominique, I'm starting with you. Where are you putting the Heat in the draft next month?
I think it's on the Saints, and they've had a good history throughout the draft, but we all know how strapped they are for money and salary cap, and the one way around that is drafting well, getting young players to contribute early. And we know that this offense was kind of geared towards Drew Brees' style. Now with Jameis Winston and losing Emmanuel Sanders, and they have Michael Thomas, who's kind of a shorter receiver, a short yardage type receiver, they need somebody in the draft to attack down the field to allow Jameis to be the best Jameis can be.
So pressure there is on New Orleans. Mike Tannenbaum, you're next. 30 seconds. Who's got the pressure next month at the draft?
The Los Angeles Chargers, and I'm not saying this because D-Wood is on the show, but it helps. It's offensive line, offensive line, and offensive line. You got a young, great quarterback in Justin Herbert. You've done a great job. You got Matt Filer, Corey Linsley. You bring back Brian Bulaga. At 13-47, mandatory. Offensive line, offensive line. They should revoke their certificate of occupancy if they draft any other position. Protect Herbert, and you got a great future.
I got two words for you. Rashawn Slater from Northwestern. Sounds like a pretty good pick there to me. One more. D. Wood, speaking of offensive linemen. 30 seconds. Give me a team under all kinds of pressure to make it big in the draft next month. Go.
Greeny, I got to go with the Jets here. You have Jets are set up perfectly to solve this whole quarterback situation that's been plaguing them for I don't know how long. They're sitting with the number 2 pick. They have a plethora of picks, multiple first-round picks. They have an opportunity to solidify the quarterback situation for the foreseeable future. This is huge for GM Joe Douglas moving forward.
Yeah, they have the 2nd pick in the draft and the 23rd pick in the first round that they got from Seattle in the Jamal Adams trade. Of course, this is a team that just traded up to solidify their quarterback position in the draft 3 years ago by taking Sam Darnold at number 3. So we see these things don't always last. Meanwhile, I wanted to finish it with this today. These quotes from Robert Kraft, he gave them to Peter King this week, talking about Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl. And he said, quote, "I was really happy for him. He's a great guy. Gave us 20 wonderful years. Made the choice to do what he wanted to do. Look, I wasn't that happy to see him leave, but we gave him the opportunity to do it." He went on to say, "And I want to say, if we're not going to win and someone's got to do it, I'm happy for him. He deserves it." I read those with a smile, knowing the personalities of the people involved. Kimberly Martin, taking a look at the relationships involved here. What was your reaction to what Mr. Kraft had to say?
I didn't buy that one bit. You got that's the PC thing to say. You're going to say, "Oh, that's great. So happy for him." But deep down, you're like, "Damn it."
I think that's a very good way to put it. Dominique, what do you think?
I mean, I want to disagree with Kimberly because that's kind of what we do, but I have to agree with her right here. I can't imagine that Robert Kraft likes seeing Tom Brady all hugged up with another team owner with a Lombardi trophy between them. I'm sure there was some jealousy set in and some competitiveness. So they are going to be really engaged this season. And I know that Robert Kraft spent this offseason pretending to be happy for his ex, but really being a little bit jealous and a little bit angry.
Well, let me try and play devil's advocate here, D. Wood. Let me sort of try and – he keeps talking about Tom Brady. He always has, as though he's like a son to him. You want to see your kids succeed, sometimes even more than yourself. Are you buying it? Are you buying Kraft who is really that happy for Brady? D. Wood.
Brady, billionaire owners have egos, okay? They don't like sitting on the sideline watching their ex go out there and winning the chip. So if you're Robert Kraft, you've been dominating the NFL for the past 20 years, and then all of a sudden your ex goes to another team and wins the Super Bowl in his first year, and that doesn't make you feel some type of way? I'm not buying any of it. Hell no.
And then finally, Mike T, I don't know how close your relationship is to Bob Kraft, but we all know you have sauna'd with Bill Belichick. How would you read the level of competitiveness in that organization right now from the very top and the way it was impacted by Brady winning the whole thing?
Yeah, ultra-competitive people. And I'm telling you, it started January 3rd. They're walking off the field after their last regular season game. Obviously, there's something there with Tom Brady and the success he has, but I'm telling you, it's much more about they want to prove they can be successful. Bob Kraft went to the Super Bowl going back with Bledsoe. He's won a little bit with Pete Carroll before Belichick, and I'm telling you, they want to win in the worst way, and Tom Brady winning is just throwing gas on the fire, and I think what we saw doesn't surprise any of us in terms of how active they were in free agency.
All right, we shall see. Again, they spent just about the same amount of money in free agency over the course of the last week as it cost Bob Kraft to buy the team once upon a time. If these investments work out as well, we'll see, because the team is now worth well over $4 billion. So that investment worked out well. All of you, thank you for getting up with us. And most importantly, thank you for getting up with us. We'll see you back in Better Than Ever tomorrow. First Take starts right now.